Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday morning, August the 21st. A bill to ban prescription drug ads in Wisconsin got a legislative hearing last week where supporters said that ads like this...
Wouldn't you know it? One moment we're on the road to romance, when suddenly it gets interrupted. That's why, for guys like me with ED, there's Cialis. Cialis is the only erectile dysfunction.
Ads like this are not only annoying, they can interfere with the doctor-patient relationship, and that they encourage the use of unnecessary and, in some cases, unsafe medications. While opponents to the bill said that this legislation was just symbolic because it would only apply to ads made in Wisconsin, and most of the ads are not, and that it was potentially illegal and a jobs killer. We will talk with a guest this hour, a professor of advertising and public relations, who agrees that this bill is largely symbolic and it wouldn't take many of these prescription drug ads off of your TV, but she still thinks this is significant and believes that these ads do more harm than good. And we will welcome your questions for her and wonder if you agree or not. Do you want to see ads for prescription drugs banned or restricted in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Jean Groh, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why do you say this bill is largely symbolic?
It is. It is largely symbolic, but I truly believe that that is a very good thing because I think it sends a message to pharmaceutical companies that the public is not on board with their practices, and it potentially lays the groundwork for future actions by other states and perhaps at the federal level as well.
Yeah, but it is symbolic because most of these ads that we watch on TV are not made in Wisconsin. They come from, probably the New York or something like that.
Most of the ads, well, they're produced in multiple places, New York, L.A., actually Chicago is a big market as well, but they're bought in national blocks and regional blocks, and just because of the way broadcast systems work, it's very difficult to block them.
Yeah, it says this bill prohibits advertising for prescription drugs, but the prohibition does not apply to an advertisement that is broadcast from or is mailed or shipped to shipped to Wisconsin, so we'd still see a lot of these ads even if this bill passes.
You will. You'll see a lot of television ads, which is where most of the money is spent, and you'll also still see a fair amount of print ads because those purchases are also done at a regional and national level.
Yeah, but why do we see so many of these ads?
Because they really increase the bottom line for the pharmaceutical industry. Their profit margin has gone up pretty dramatically over the course of the beginning of advertising to consumers.
Yeah. And is there anything wrong with letting a consumer know that, Cialis is now a product that they can talk to their doctor about?
Well, I don't think discussing a problem is inherently wrong. What I think the problem is as you mentioned before, proponents suggest that these ads educate the public. They also suggest that it encourages better communication with between doctor and patient. They also talk about how it helps with medical compliance. And I would say that that's really not true. Rather, I believe that it encourages the higher rise in drug costs. It leads to higher demand of unnecessary and inappropriate medication, and I believe that it damages the doctor-patient relationship. In the bigger picture, I think that direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals cultivates a belief among the public that there's a pill for every illness, and these ads contribute to the idea that every ailment, even trivial ailments, are medicalized and really it contributes even more to the over-medication of our society.
Yeah, what? Why do you say it damages the doctor-patient relationship?
Well, I think for a number of reasons, but what really strikes me is in the time of managed care, where physicians have less and less time with patients, I think the average now is 7 minutes per visit. If a consumer comes in, a patient comes in and asks for a drug by name, the physician has to take a fair amount of time, and should, to discuss the fact that either this medication is a reasonable choice or not a reasonable choice, or perhaps they really don't have the illness that they think they have after seeing the ads, or perhaps there's a generic on the market that would be less expensive. But there's a lot of time taken in a meeting between the doctor and the patient that is lost, that wouldn't have to be taken up with discouraging a particular drug that may not be appropriate.
We're talking with Jean Groh, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University, about a bill that's in the state legislature that would seek to ban prescription drug ads in Wisconsin, or to certainly restrict the ads in Wisconsin. And we wonder what you think about this. Our guest says that these ads do more harm than good, and that the effort in the state legislature might be symbolic, but still significant. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday morning, August the 21st. Hoping you'll join Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. Ben has rescheduled his open line for 4 o'clock this afternoon. He was going to do that yesterday, but instead talked about all of the wet weather and flooding and problems being caused by all of the rain, especially in southwestern Wisconsin. He talked about that yesterday at 4 o'clock, so he'll reschedule his open line today at 4 o'clock. We are talking about prescription drug ads and a bill that would ban them in Wisconsin. Jean Groh, our guest, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University, giving us her take on this. And before we go to the phones, our lines are full, by the way, Professor Groh. Isn't this something that should be taken up on a national level rather than a state-by-state level?
Well, it has actually been taken up on a national level, and the pharmaceutical industry, with their vast amounts of money and many, many, many lobbyists, has been very successful in defeating efforts at the national level to impose sanctions or moratoriums more appropriately. In 2005, Senator Bill Frist had asked that the pharmaceutical industry impose a two-year moratorium on advertising of new drugs so that tracking of efficacy could be done over a longer period of time before new drugs are introduced to consumers. And the pharmaceutical industry was vehemently opposed to this, and over the course of the next 2 years, they lobbied very aggressively. They rolled out codes of conduct in September of 2005 as a response to this. I will tell you that as of October of 2005, they have not been available on the internet, nor have I been able to get them from the lobbying organization that represents them. So they sort of appeared and then disappeared. The FDA had hearings in 2005 on this same topic. I would say overall, consumers and consumer advocates were largely negative about it, and, of course, lobbyists for the pharmaceutical industry were aggressively for it. And earlier this year, there was an agreement in Congress not to impose a two-year moratorium.
Mm-hmm. Wally in Fox Point is with us. Hi, Wally.
Boy, I think the professor is off the mark here. If this is an issue, it's got to be resolved at the federal level. And it can't be done by state legislation. I'll make a legal argument, and then I'll make an economic argument. First, with the legal argument, in 1951, Congress and the President agreed to give the Food and Drug Administration jurisdiction over prescription drug advertising. The field has been preempted by the feds. This is not something states can engage in on a piecemeal basis. Now the economic argument. You're a professor at Marquette, is that correct?
That's correct.
You're teaching students how to make a living in advertising, theoretically?
Theoretically, that's what I do.
Theoretically. And when you support this bill, you are supporting legislation which will make it more difficult for your graduates to get jobs in Wisconsin, working for Wisconsin newspapers or Wisconsin radio or television stations, because they are the only entities that would be penal, that would be subject to the restriction in the bill. The CBS network can send the commercials into Wisconsin from Chicago or New York. Such ads can be printed in the Minneapolis Star Tribune and distributed in Eau Claire and northwestern Wisconsin. The ads will come into Wisconsin from the Chicago Tribune. You would affect none of the out-of-state media, and the full burden would apply only on in-state businesses. And I think that's a nutty proposition.
Yeah, and Professor Rowe, you are not here to talk about the constitutionality of this particular legislation, but do you want to address whether this is unfair economically to Wisconsin to do this just in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. Mm. First of all, I've spent years in the industry, so what I bring to the classroom is based on my industry experience as well as my academic training. So I'm fully aware of what it takes to get a job in this industry and to keep a job, and I disagree with Wally pretty strongly. First of all, in Wisconsin, I believe, and I'd have to check this, but I'm almost sure that there is not a single ad agency that has a drug company as a client. So in terms of being hired at an ad agency and losing an account because of this bill, I think that's an absolute zero. I don't think that's even possible. In terms of local media buys, we're talking about local newspaper buys, which, again, I'd have to check my data, but I would think is probably about maybe 2% of the advertising expenditure that the vast majority I know goes to television and magazines. And I doubt that Wisconsin, across 50 states, with probably 2 or 3% of the budget, is going to feel too much effect from this.
Yeah. And again, we knew when we invited you that you're not necessarily a constitutional lawyer, but you would suspect that this legislation, if it passes, probably would be challenged.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And I do agree with Wally that at the federal level is really the place that we need to address this. But I think at the federal level also, the lobbyists have such powerful influence that I think any time the consumer's voice can be heard, and even if it starts state by state, then sometimes that's a way to put pressure on Washington.
Yeah. John in Madison is with us now. Hi, John.
Yeah, well, commercial speech is not free speech. It's speech that can be regulated according to the Supreme Court on multiple counts, multiple rulings throughout the entire 20th century. They've said that you simply can't say anything you want to the public, and that's part of the problem here. People don't, they don't know the studies. They don't know whether the claims being made for the drugs are true or false. The side effects are played down, and especially with new products, there's something called an ongoing study to see what side effects are that has not been established. So they, you know, it's a pig in a poke. You don't know what, you know, what are you getting here? But one of the things I really don't like about this is when I watch these is they usually use fear to elicit emotion, and that's a propagandist tool. You elicit an emotion, then you show the people how you can get rid of the emotion if it's an unpleasant one. And what fear does is it makes people more gullible. Their credulity is enhanced, and they'll believe virtually anything, and then they'll immediately, almost ritually, automatically, reflexively, take whatever suggestion will reduce that unpleasant emotion. The other there's so many things I don't like about this. It puts a pressure on the physician because the person sees people and authority is mm-hmm. represented to the spades with very attractive people with incredibly compelling stories, and then the person is. He has this fear elicited from all these authority figures, and he's going to go to his doctor and say, listen, you know, I have exactly the same thing. Why can't I have this drug? And if the doctor you know, professionally, legitimately says, no, I don't think this is appropriate for you, the person is going to have a sense of dissatisfaction, and it's going to put a little hitch in the trust that this person has with his particular physician, besides wasting inordinate time. You know, to me, it's something that I hope they're successful in stopping this. And from the medical side, I hope you have Peter Briggins talk about this.
Yeah. And you think that waste of time between the patient and doctor is also important, Professor Groh?
I absolutely do. And what John just talked about is really true. When a patient comes in and asks for a drug, it really prioritizes the pharmaceutical industry's information over the doctor's expertise in the mind of the patient. And he's right. Oftentimes that is the experience of physicians, that a patient comes in wanting a particular drug, and when they're told it's not the appropriate drug, they become really disgruntled, and it can really erode the trust they have with the physician. I also wanted to talk about his use of fear tactics, or his discussion on fear tactics. He's right, that's really common. And if you look at what the FDA talks about as the most common violations, they are overstating the product's efficacy, minimizing the risks, and expanding indication or patient population for whom the drug is not indicated. So fear tactics play in really well when you talk about overstating the product's efficacy or minimizing risks. You kind of want to play up that if you don't use this drug, you're not going to have this wonderful life. Or if you don't use this drug, really bad things are going to happen to you.
Yeah. Next is Mike in Brookhill. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I apologize for the road noise here, but I'm really enjoying the conversation. I guess the question I had and sort of the comment I had was, you know, given what the professor just talked about in regard to the overstatement of the efficacy or minimizing the risk, I guess, and I didn't catch it in the intro to this piece, is this bill being introduced through a PAC or a PERG, or is this being done through a group of concerned citizens?
It's a bill that was introduced by, I believe it was Tim Carpenter. I have no idea. You know, I don't think there's a pack or anything behind it. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know exactly who suggested it to him, but a state legislator from the Milwaukee area is the author of the bill. Gene Groh, do you have any information on any of that in terms of who's behind this bill?
I don't. Mm-hmm. I have the same information you have, and there appear to be five or six senators who are co-sponsoring the bill.
Yeah, introduced by Senators Carpenter, Robson, Hansen, Lehman, Miller, and Coggs, and it has a number of co-sponsors as well. All of those are Democrats, I believe. We're going to check news from National Public Radio, and then we will return and continue talking with Gene Groh, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University, talking about this bill that received a public hearing in the state legislature last week that would ban or restrict prescription drug ads in Wisconsin. The ads for pharmaceuticals like Viagra, Cialis, the list goes on and on. Do you want to see these ads banned in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Tuesday, August the 21st. An effort to ban prescription drug ads in Wisconsin is being criticized as symbolic, potentially illegal, and a jobs killer for broadcast companies that air the ads. Supporters say it's a way to protect consumers from unnecessary or even dangerous medicine. The bill in the state legislature received a hearing on Thursday, August the 15th. Shemaine Mills reports.
Bills pending in the Senate and Assembly represent the second time lawmakers have tried to restrict prescription drug advertising in the state. Milwaukee Senator Tim Carpenter says the legislation is aimed at what are sometimes untruthful or misleading ads.
I feel it's the nature of advertising to appeal to emotion and not facts.
Pharmaceutical makers point out the Food and Drug Administration does regulate ads. However, a report by the Government Accountability Office showed only a small fraction of advertising is actually reviewed by the agency. Plus, delayed advertising of new drugs is voluntary. The industry came up with those guidelines after a series of deaths and lawsuits over the popular painkiller Vioxx. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America is against a state ban on prescription ads. Stephanie Dolbert says it's up to doctors what drug their patient takes. No one, in her words, is being bullied.
Any suggestion that physicians will write prescriptions for unnecessary medications against their better judgment in response to bullying from a patient is unsupported. We've seen no evidence to that.
Firms that track advertising spending show that prescription drug ads are increasing in number and length. Those ads produce revenue that broadcast and print organizations told state lawmakers they depend on. What everyone can count on is a court battle if state or congressional efforts to restrict ads ever get on the books. Shebane Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
So we wonder what you think about these prescription drug ads and what you think about this effort in the legislature to ban or restrict these ads in Wisconsin. Good idea, bad idea? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are talking with a guest who says it's a good idea. Jean Groh, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University. And our next caller is Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, Victor. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Ms. Groh.
Good morning.
I think the legislation is symbolic, and to me, it kind of contributes to a dumbing down of society. I hate to sound cynical with this, but people really need to read more consumer education, start reading more health material and all that, because personally, for instance, you have this weight management drug, which they like to advertise a lot on TV, and they say, well, it'll affect, you know, it'll reduce the fat around your abdominals and that kind of stuff, and personally, I know better that, you know, drugs work globally around your body, not just locally, so, you know, it's miles of personal education that you have to do, and, you know, to me, people really need to start taking initiative on their own bodies and start researching and reading more. And again, I don't want to sound callous about this, but these ads are laughable, and this legislation is unnecessary. And I have a question for you. If you took these ads totally off TV, what percentage will it affect the consumer? I mean, will it be the same, or will it rise, or will it, you know, the products purchased? When you purchase these products, will they go down? What percentage is that?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Victor.
For instance, if you took off that Cialis commercial, I mean, how would it affect, you know, the consumer market in a way? I'm just curious about it.
Yeah, would Cialis stop being prescribed and go away if these ads went away, Professor Groh? Any idea?
Well, I doubt drugs like Cialis would go away, but he brings up an interesting point if he's talking about if they didn't spend money on advertising, what might happen. And it might be interesting for your listeners to know that research and development has only gone up by 2 percentage points in the pharmaceutical industry since 1995, because the vast majority of their increases have gone to advertising. Now, the spending, if you look at the spending in 2005 in the industry, it was $4.2 billion spent on direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals, $7.2 billion to doctors. But that also includes the fact that it pays for pharmaceutical reps. They also cover what is called CME, continuing medical education training, which the pharmaceutical industry largely funds, and $31.4 billion to R&D. Now, that sounds huge. You say $4.2 billion to advertising and $31.4 to R&D. That's fantastic. The reality is direct-to-consumer advertising, the budget for that has grown twice as fast as promotion to doctors and twice as fast as the budget for R&D. In fact, spending for direct-to-consumer advertising has gone up approximately 20% a year since 1997.
Yeah. And Victor, I'm sorry I'm slow this morning. I didn't get your question, but that sounded like our guest did. Did that answer your question?
Well, it answered better than what I expected, so I appreciate it. But again, I emphasize people really need to educate themselves more and quit allowing society to dumb them down and take advantage of them. You know, they really going to have to start taking personal responsibility.
I could not agree more.
Virginia in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning to both of you. I'm not a big fan of these ads. Let me say that. In fact, I find most of them disturbing. But what I find even more disturbing is the territorial attitude that the doctors have taken about this, as if they know best and we're supposed to trust them. And in along Victor's lines, we need to educate ourselves. I don't know how many times and how many people I've known that have gone out and found their own treatment ideas, taken them to the doctor only to have them just shot down because the doctor didn't think of it. There's a certain arrogant attitude that we are too ignorant to understand advertising and to discern. And I think that's what is most at stake here, is this idea that that the doctors want to take this proprietary information back. And these pharmaceutical companies are reaching them all the time. And I think patients do have to go on the internet and patients to look up their own information. We can't rely on either ads or doctors. And I don't like taking out one side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take my answer off the air, Joy. And thanks for this program.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Thanks, Virginia, for the call. Professor Groh?
I think Virginia's point that consumers need to really educate themselves, of course, going along with what Victor said, is very, very true. But it does bring up the point that the advertisements are really targeted at only a few drugs. So it's not like the pharmaceutical industry is out there really educating consumers about public health. In truth, there are thousands of pharmaceuticals available. And the reality is the advertising is focused on the top 20, but even more specifically on the top 10 drugs. And the top 10 drugs in 2005 accounted for 40% of advertising spending. And those drugs were drugs that would more commonly fit under something called enhancement drugs. They were sleeping pills, drugs that focus on allergies, fungal infections. So to think that advertising of pharmaceuticals is really educating the consumers about public health is really not accurate.
The ED has to be in the top 10, right?
Actually, ED is not in the top 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's shocking.
That's in 2005.
Okay.
But I suspect if I had data, which I do not have, in 2006, it would be there.
Yeah. Rob in Rhinelander is with us now. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Good morning. I think she kind of touched on the direction I was going to go with my question with her last answer. And I still, I guess, I have a problem with what is wrong with educating the public. The caller before talked about it being so one-sided with the physicians. Anything that will better educate us has got to be good.
Mm-hmm. Professor Groh?
Well, if they were in fact educating consumers deeply or broadly, I would support this, but I do not think that's really what happens, because the ads are really focused on a very small fragment of the pharmaceuticals, and they tend to be on drugs which are called enhancement drugs or lifestyle drugs. So it's really about using spending to promote a medicalization of problems that may in the past have been much less looked at as medical problems: sleep difficulty, baldness, PMS, restless legs, menopause, shyness, erectile dysfunction. I mean, many of those were looked at as either natural process of aging or something that had more societal effects, like depression, which, of course, is clearly a major medical issue for some individuals. But there are a lot of social components to that are never talked about. If you have stress in your job or you're in an abusive relationship or you're living in poverty, all of these things can lead to depression, which isn't a biological cause. So it's a very one-sided debate.
We're talking with Jean Groh, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University, about this bill that's in the state legislature that seeks to ban pharmaceutical advertising in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number, if you have a question or an opinion on this. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, I'll be welcoming in a guest who says the societal costs of alcohol abuse are very high, too high, and maybe the cost of alcohol needs to be higher to help combat this. So we'll talk about that coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking about prescription drug advertising. You know, you see them all the time. Ads for Viagra, ads for Lunesta. How about this one?
You know when you feel the weight of sadness. You may feel exhausted, hopeless, and anxious. Whatever you do, you feel lonely and don't enjoy the things you once loved. Things just don't feel like they used to. These are some symptoms of depression, a serious medical condition affecting over 20 million Americans. While the cause is unknown.
And I'm going to cut that short before it advertises the actual product. We are talking about whether these ads should be banned in Wisconsin or not. Our guest is Jean Groh, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University. She's talking with us about legislation in the legislature that would seek to do that. She says that these ads do more harm than good, and that this largely symbolic effort by the state legislature is nonetheless significant, though, because it tells the pharmaceutical companies that we've had enough of these ads, and maybe it might lead to other states adopting similar legislation. Christina in Oshkosh is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I agree with her, and I think a past caller mentioned the fact that people should educate themselves more, but it seems to me that we pay the money for the drugs and for everything else, that they should be doing the research, not us. They shouldn't be experimenting on us to find out what happens. They should have at least a 2-year moratorium on commercials for things to find out what really does happen. And you see all these deaths because they push the drugs through and then they advertise them like crazy. And people think, ooh, brand new drug, it's got to be safe. Obviously, it's not. And it seems to me that it is very propagandist. The way they advertise things. They induce fear, and then they give you what they think is a solution. That guy was absolutely right on that. But there should be a lot more money allocated to research and development, not advertising. We pay these people to do this research for us, and it doesn't seem they're even bothering to try now.
Mm-hmm. Professor Groh?
Well, again, I would agree with your caller. If you look at the fact that the pharmaceutical industry is seeing a 2% rise in their R&D budgets and a 20% rise in their direct-to-consumer advertising budgets on an annual basis, it's pretty clear that direct-to-consumer advertising is about marketing and really not about public health. And another point of note is that the pharmaceutical industry funds 70% of the drug trials in the United States, as compared to the NIH, which their budget keeps being reduced, and so the pharmaceutical industry steps in to fund more of these drug trials. When the same industry that manufactures a product and sells the product is in charge of running the trials, one can imagine that there's going to be a skewed perspective, and I believe that perspective is what's going to sell and not necessarily public health.
Paul, and I'm not sure where, writes an email, my pediatrician friends tell me teenage boys are asking for Viagra. I was a camp counselor and a teenage boy. Teenage boys don't need Viagra. My young nephews and their friends are drinking coffee and caffeine, loaded drinks to wake up, protein to bulk up, sleeping pills to fall asleep. Lifelong users equals billions of dollars. Want to just react to that?
Absolutely. It's a really interesting and actually a sad thing that I believe is happening, especially around the idea of advertising drugs for ED. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's not an uncommon thing to hear this. I've seen studies and I've talked to people about the same issue where teens are asking for it. It's become a recreational drug in terms of 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds. So it becomes more of a, it has been reconstructed as a social issue, And so if you don't have a certain level of potency, you're no longer an important man, so this drug will help you. And that message isn't lost on people who, frankly, have no issues with this problem. So mm-hmm. it really reflects the idea of lifestyle enhancement and the way drugs are marketed.
Dennis in Fairchild is with us now. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning. I've been listening, and my original question did get answered, but I just don't see what local government has to do with monitoring or censoring what the public has a right to know, that's what drugs are being offered out there. They, you know, we have the choice of asking our doctor for them, but actually it's up to the doctor to write that prescription.
Yeah. Any further reaction on that, Professor Groom?
I guess I would just comment that if there are thousands of drugs available, and really there are 10 to 20 of those drugs that are advertised on a regular basis, I really don't think they are giving the public what they need to know. They are promoting drugs that will increase their profit margin.
Mm-hmm. It's come up several times, too, and I don't recall if we addressed it specifically, that doctors get visits from pharmaceutical companies, suitcases full of samples or some other incentives to prescribe this particular prescription drug over another. Since doctors have all this information on that side, doesn't it give us a little information on our side to see these ads?
It certainly gives us a little information, but it's really limited information. Mm-hmm. And if you look at print advertising, you will find that print advertising almost always in a magazine will be on the right-hand page. And that ad will be very beautiful, and there'll be wonderful colors and great images, and they'll list a few benefits and side effects. But there's really not in-depth information. If you turn the page, that's where the brief summary is, and that's what's required by the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
That brief summary is in minuscule type. It is the exact same language that is used for advertising that's directed at physicians and that is legally allowable. I can't understand that. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that a consumer can understand that. And the ads on TV don't even require that much detail. So how much information are consumers really getting that they can understand?
Yeah. Steve in Darlington is with us now. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Jill. Hi, Professor.
Hello.
I have a chronic illness. I've suffered with asthma just about my whole life. And what I found with the doctors is that you go, they do a bunch of tests on you, they put you on a medicine or that they think is what's best for you, and you improve, and then they leave you go. Then you go back every 6 months, every 4 months, and they say, yeah, you're doing okay. Well, I was really suffering with my asthma, just terrible, and the doctor kept saying, well, you know, you're getting older, whatever, and I saw an ad on TV for an asthma medication. I won't say what it was. And then I went back to him with this information, and he said, well, we can give it a try, and it completely changed my life. On a day like today with the humidity and everything, I would have been lucky to get out of bed 4 years ago. Now I'm up, I'm out, active, I can move, I can do just about what anybody else does. And it was all because of this ad. And mm-hmm. I really hope they don't cut these ads because it's, I wouldn't say it saved my life, but it improved the quality of my life so much that anybody else out there, get all the information you can because these doctors don't have time. They get you a little bit better, and they think they're doing you a world of good, and there's stuff out there that could maybe make your quality of life so much better.
Right.
And don't
yeah.
take that away from us.
Right. There's a testimonial on the other side of Professor Groh.
Well, I certainly am happy to hear that he has had such positive results with a new medication. And clearly there are people who have had very good results going into their physician requesting a drug by name and seeing a dramatic improvement. But I think what he's really speaking to is much more about issues that we have in terms of managed care, where doctors simply don't have the time anymore to do what they used to have the time to do, and that the whole medical system has changed, and it's not necessarily to the benefit of consumers.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve, for the call. One last call. Daniel in Beaver Dam. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to bring up the issue I don't feel that anybody has with the advertising dollars. When the advertising of tobacco, and hard liquor and such was banned previously, I don't think you saw a television station, print media, going belly up. I don't think there's going to be a lack of advertisers.
Probably not, Professor Groh.
It's interesting he should say that, because there was a little bit of a downturn in the industry, but new clients step up to the plate, advertising agencies seek new clients, and it wasn't long before that little tiny blip in the advertising industry rose again. I just wanted to make one more comment for a point of reference and some thought as we're getting near to the end here.
Yeah, and we only have about 30 seconds, I'm afraid.
Okay, for every dollar spent on direct-to-consumer advertising, there is a yield of $4.20 in sales. And I think that's a pretty dramatic point to end with.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Jean Groh, Associate Professor of Advertising and Public Relations at Marquette University. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour and to Karen Prager for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for all of your phone calls. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.